give emphasis to an urgency that I really feel associated with them. First, I am a very firm believer in the reality of a balance in all aspects of the human theater. When there seems to be a development of move that away, somehow, very shortly, or almost in concert, there is a move this away that keeps things in some delicate balance. If there must be a dichotomization of concepts into good and evil, then all good seems to contain its unexpressed evil, and all evil its unexpressed good. Within the human mind, there coexists the eros, the life-loving, the self-perpetrating force, with the thanatos, the self-destructive death wish. Both are present in each of us, but are usually separated by a very difficult wall, a very difficult to penetrate wall, the unconscious. One definition of the tools I seek is that they may allow words of a vocabulary which might allow each human being to more consciously and more clearly communicate with the interior of his own mind and psyche. This may be called a vocabulary of awareness. A person who becomes increasingly aware of, and so begins to acknowledge, the existence of the two opposite contributors to his motives and decisions, may begin to make choices which are knowledgeable. And the learning process that follows such choices is the path that leads to wisdom. But just as there is a balance within the mind that needs establishment, there is an interesting record of balances of the same sort in society. Let's look for a few minutes at some of the coincidences that have kept our human race in a rather precarious balance. Throughout the early centuries of the current millennium, there were carried out some of the most viciously inhuman wars that were known to man, all in the name of the forces of religion and the horrors of the Inquisition with its lethal intolerance of heresy. And yet it was during these dark years that the structure of alchemy was established. Not to change base metals into noble ones, as is often thought, but to acquire knowledge through the study of matter. The work of the alchemists extended up to the Age of Enlightenment with the urges of rationalism and of skepticism. And it was always directed toward the learning process. The reward of alchemistic effort has been simply stated as the effort to achieve the transmutation of base metals into gold. But as Ralph pointed out just a bit ago, this is not the actual reward. The value was the doing and the redoing and the redoing of the process of distillation, of sublimation, of condensation, of precipitation. It was a continual, ever more exact effort to understand these processes, that from the learning of the process, one would be able to find a unity between the physical and the spiritual world. It was the doing and the redoing itself that was the reward. In the last 100 years or so, this learning process has evolved into what we call science. However, there has been a subtle shift in the goal from the process itself to the results of the process. In this age of science, it is only the end result, the gold, that really matters. It is not the act of achieving, but the achievement itself that brings one the acknowledgement of his peers, that brings recognition from the outside world, that results in the wealth, in wealth and in influence and in power. And these end achievements, these results, show the same dichotomy of directions which was so evident from the previous centuries. For years, there had been no separation of values. Neither direction had taken the colors of good or for evil. But still, there were incredible coincidences of timing. For example, in 1895, Wilhelm Conrad von Ranken observed that when electricity was applied to an evacuated tube containing certain gases, a nearby plate covered with barium platinocyanide emitted a visible glow. And the next year, in 1896, Antoine-Henri Becquerel found that these same metal-producing emanations were being emitted from uranium. Radioactivity had been discovered. But it was just in the following year, at 11:45 a.m., on the 23rd of November of 1897, that Arthur Hefter consumed an alkaloid that he had isolated from the peyote, dumpling cactus, brought to the Western world by the irrepressible pharmacologist Louis Levine. As Hefter wrote in his notes, and this is a quotation following 150 milligrams of mescaline, "From time to time, dots with the most brilliant colors floated across the field of vision. Later on, landscapes, halls, architectural scenes also appeared." Mescaline had also been discovered. During the 1920s and 1930s, both worlds, that of the physical sciences involving radiation and that of the psychopharmacological sciences involving psychotropic materials, continued to develop without any clear sense of polarity, without the mine is good and yours is evil duality that was soon to come. Radioactivity and radiation were becoming the mainstays of medicine. X-ray photography was invaluable in diagnosis, and radium therapy was broadly used in treatment. Controlled and localized radiation could destroy malignant tissue while sparing the host. And in the area of psychology, there were parallel developments. The theories of Freud and Jung were being developed into increasingly useful clinical tools and approaches to mental illness. And the basis of experimental psychology was laid in the pioneering studies of Pavlov. Another coincidence in timing, which in retrospect started a dividing of science onto separate paths, occurred during World War II. In the late 1942, Enrico Fermi and several other scientists at the University of Chicago demonstrated for the first time ever that nuclear fission could be achieved and could be controlled by man. The age of unlimited power and freedom from dependency upon our dwindling fossil reserves had begun. Just the next year, at 4:20 p.m. on the 19th of April, Albert Hofmann consumed a measured amount of a compound which he had first synthesized some 5 years earlier. As Hofmann subsequently reported, as a quotation following 250 micrograms, "After the crisis of confusion and despair, I began to enjoy the unprecedented colors and plays of shapes that persisted. Kaleidoscopic, fantastic images surged in on me, alternating, variegated, opening and closing themselves in circles and spirals." LSD had also been discovered. But then, still, and up until the last decade, it was the rich promise of the nuclear age, first with the power and potential of fission, and later with the virtually limitless potential of fusion energy, that carried the banner and the hopes of man. And the area of the hallucinogenics was categorized as negative, psychosis imitating, psychotomimetic. It was not until someone in the 1970s, sometime in the 1970s, that a strange and a fascinating and a rather frightening reversal of roles had took place. The knowledge of nuclear fission and fusion took on a death-loving aspect, with country after country joining the fraternity of those skilled in the capacity for the eradication of the human experiment. And to have such power leads to the threat to use such power, which in time will actually lead to its use. But, as I said earlier, when one thing develops, there seems to spring forth a balancing, a compensatory counterpart. This balance can be realized with the psychedelic drugs. What had been simply tools for the study of psychosis at best, or for escapist self-gratification at worst, suddenly assume the character of tools of enlightenment and of some form of transcendental communication. If man's alter ego, his thanatos, had been entrusted with the imperpetual knowledge of how he can completely destroy himself and this extraordinary experiment, then some development must occur at the eros side of his psyche that will and must afford the learning of how to live with this perpetual knowledge. It is a communication between these two sides of the mind that requires an extraordinary vocabulary. Where do these words come from, the words of this vocabulary? All depend upon an intimate insight into the working of the human mind, but this can be approached in many ways. The study of religion, of meditation, of self-yielding, provides a peace, but in my mind also tends toward a retreat and hence a capitulation. The efforts of to amalgamate the two sides of the mind, as seen in the Tao of Physics, and the rich findings of parallelisms between the Eastern and Western philosophies may eventually explain all and allow some unification for the human purpose. But I feel, along with many others, that the efforts being invested in the technology of destruction does not allow sufficient time. It is possibly only with the psychedelic drugs that words of vocabulary can be established which might tunnel through the subconscious between the conflicting aspects of the mind and psyche. It is here that I feel my skill lies, and this is exactly why I do what I do. Where do we stand as of today? In the last handful of years, the forces of government and nationalism have amassed an unprecedented arsenal of destructive power. The power is in the current arsenals of the world. If restructured into Hiroshima-strength weapons, to detonate one bomb every minute, on the minute, for the next 2 years. And the rationalization, the rationalized need to do so is becoming manifest at a frightening pace. But in the last handful of years, a number of tools of communication have increased at a like rate. There are currently nearly 200 psychedelic drugs known and described, some touching at one, some at another, of the fibers that unify our minds. By learning each of the structures of sensory communication in turn, we might find a form of communication that would disarm our destructive compulsion.
A way to disarm the destructive compulsion in our species. Now, if that isn't a goal worth working for, well, then I don't know what would be. Over the years, I've taken psychedelic medicines with quite a few people. People of all types from all walks of life. And there are two things that I've noticed that they all have in common. And these are a heightened state of awareness regarding the ecological plight of our planet, and a love for one another that transcends family, religion, nationality, or even race. And so I'll continue to produce these podcasts in the hope that over time the facts about the nature and power of these medicines to heal us humans becomes more widely known each and every day. Now, before I sign off, I want to be sure that you know that all of the episodes of these podcasts from the Psychedelic Salon are now also available on SoundCloud. If you go to our main site at psychedelicsalon.com and click on the podcast link, in the right sidebar, you're going to see a link to our SoundCloud page. And there you'll find a direct link to the group that holds all of these podcasts in reverse chronological order. That is, with the most recent one first. Also on that page, you're going to find links to several of the playlists that I've set up. As you will see, the Terrence McKenna list, not counting today's podcast, has 166 tracks in it, which don't count the 43 tracks in the Trialogues playlist, of which he is in most of them. In the Psychedelic Elders playlist, you'll find 107 podcasts listed, and that includes more than 50 featuring Timothy Leary. And if you're a SoundCloud user, then you already know that you can not only create your own playlist of these podcasts, all of them may also be streamed directly from the web links. And in the playlist that I've set up, there are over 70 podcasts in the Palenque Norte list, 54 in Women's Perspectives, 24 in Mind States Conferences, 34 podcasts included information and live news broadcasts during the Occupy Wall Street phase of the Occupy movement, and there are over 50 tracks in the ayahuasca list. Also, I've been informed that the Salon has now been approved for inclusion in Google Music. I haven't had a chance to check that out yet, but please let me know via the contact link on our program notes page if you find us there. Now, before I go, there are two final Terrence McKenna sound bites that I'd like to play for you. The first one is about the fact, at least what I happen to believe is a fact, that the worldwide psychedelic community of like-minded people are, in a very positive way, minded mutants who hold the potential of transforming our species. And that is followed by what I can best say is a call to action, one which I hope you'll take to heart, as I know you will.
The future evolution of...
But unfortunately, it's time for a live show here on Free Radio, and that is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, my Thursday evening show. I'm Robert Norris. I hope you stay with me here on the stream of Freak Radio, or Free Radio, at freakradio.org. Going to be reviewing events of the past week and looking forward to Shudder the next week. So don't go away.
Mankind is going to be based.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. history's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of breadlines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. I want a song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle. It must be packed with social fact, or I won't love you. Sing me of kings and conferences martial. Tell me of mills and mines. Sing me of courts that aren't impartial. What's to be done with them? Tell me in rhythm. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must be tense with common sense, or I won't love you.
And a wet evening to you here on, well, from the final days of our Free Radio Santa Cruz studio. We are not being flooded out, but being, unfortunately, sort of termed out. The space we've been in is now required for remodeling, and we are with a thank you to the landlord who's let us be here largely rent-free, and thank you very much for that, actually entirely rent-free. We're now going to have to pack up and move, but we don't have any place to move to. So for anyone who has any ideas about a vacant 10-by-10 space in the Santa Cruz area, downtown is preferable, but anywhere is possible, do contact us on this website at freakradio.org or call me. I'm Robert Norris at 423-4833, 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, which is also the number for the homeless civil rights group that I'm regularly touting on this station, and let us know. We need access to electricity, internet, and it would be nice if we had access to a bathroom, though we kind of have been struggling along without one here in the current studio. So it is really important for us to have a place, a centralized place to broadcast from if we were to be more than a sort of a separate series of occasional voices on free radio. So, again, 423-4833 or freakradio.org. If you hear of anything, have any ideas about where we can get a small space to set up our equipment and continue these broadcasts for you. Otherwise, you're largely going to be hearing rebroadcasts at the end of February. That's what happened to us before, and some of us were able to still produce shows. I don't know that anyone actually produced live shows. Some may have. I was able to produce a fairly frequent, well, regular shows that were done before broadcast time, which didn't involve call-ins, but did involve recent interviews. But still, it's much, much better to have a station. For example, today, as the rain beats down and there are potential emergency situations, though we are not on the air, and we hope to be again, by the way, within 2 weeks. We're going to be in the strange situation of, in about 2 or 3 weeks, of actually being on the air, because we'll have our antenna up, but we will not have a place to actually broadcast from as far as a studio goes. But even though we're not on the air, for those who are listening to us on the Internet, we can pass on news and information about emergency happenings around weather problems or other problems that have come up. So don't fail to call in if you've got something you want to report about what's going on in the Santa Cruz area that you think needs to get out to even the small audience that may be listening to this show. I'm not quite sure how large we are, but some folks do listen, and they can spread the word, too. That's what community radio really is about, and I'm hoping that we can use it and that you will use it for that purpose. So I'm hoping to kind of look into the next city council meeting, or shitty council meeting, as I like to call them, with my, I don't know, whether it's adolescent or simply terminally frustrated perspective on them. I have actually been getting civil, if somewhat empty, responses from council members that I emailed some days ago asking for their office hours. That's something I traditionally request for new city council members, and actually old city council members too, because I think all city council members should have an open policy with respect to members of the community. And I don't just mean the smiling face that you see nodding at you as they sort of glaze out at city council meetings while you are allowed your 2 minutes or 3 minutes, usually 2 minutes. At last Tuesday, day before yesterday, it was 1 minute at their special Parks and Rec general plan session. But I mean, you know, a real situation where you can come in and meet with them and talk to them about what you think needs to be done and give them some real community input. Now, again, this sort of suggests that we really have a representative body that's actually concerned with real issues, which I don't want to give that misimpression, at least around the issues I've been pressing for the last few decades, namely civil rights for poor people outside and inside, for that matter, but mostly outside. Essentially abandons violence. Police departments that are accessible and transparent, access to police records when people want them. Of course, it would be nice to have an efficient police department that really is available for real problems, but that, it seemed to me increasingly, is not either the function or the way the actual police department operates. Either in this city or in many others, that they're essentially really a class set of property protectors who will help you if you're in a certain class, but who will otherwise try to shuffle you along if you're a poor person, or scapegoat you, for that matter, if the need arises. And I don't know that this is done maliciously, but I think it's done almost mechanically as a form of prejudice, in the same way that black people are shot far more frequently than white people by police departments in terms of the percentage of the population across the country. And in Santa Cruz, we have a situation where it's hard to tell what the situation is as far as race profiling goes, although generally the last time HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, checked out the race profiling situation by examining citations, when we finally got access to the race of the citations, which took us quite a while, we found that there was one particular officer, Bradley Barnett, who was in fact ticketing African Americans at a far greater rate. I think it was a 7 times greater rate than their occurrence in the population, with harassment infraction citations such as smoking on Pacific Avenue or sitting near a building, that sort of thing. And I haven't seen much of him or heard much of him recently. I'm not sure what happened. Maybe our publicizing of that situation had a positive effect. I don't know. but recently attempts to find out what the racial activity of the police department is, it did run into a stone wall for a year and a half. The police would not give us those stats, or would not give me the stats. And I think a second person tried to get them, and he couldn't get them either. But more recently, in the last couple of weeks, they've said they will give the stats. But when I ask them to be specific about the times we can come in and check for them, whether they're actually going to be available, all I've gotten is silence from the current police chief, Kevin Vogel, who, by the way, I've heard from activist Abby Samuels, is retiring in June. He's gotten that information, she says, pretty clearly from, I guess, mainstream news media. And I'm going to kind of go through some of both her, one of her reports. Actually, I'm going to try to get her on the line to talk about her own experiences with the Freedom Sleepers 83rd Sleepout night before last, and the kind of policing that the Freedom Sleepers experienced, and their, more important, their response to it. And I'm looking at the city newsroom. It's on the city's website announcement. And indeed, what it says is, Chief of Police Kevin Vogel announces retirement. City chief has served the city of Santa Cruz for 30 years, effective June 2nd, 2017. He was hired on February 9th, 1987, appointed chief December 2010. Beginning his law enforcement career with the Santa Cruz Police Department, Kevin attended a 16-week basic plan. It's a whole series of, it's a history of his promotions. Sergeant, 1995. Lieutenant, 2002. Deputy chief, 2004. And then on December 9th, he became police chief, which actually I thought it was earlier, because I know there was a very key development where the, for those of us who are political protesters or believe in public access to public spaces around the center of government at City Hall, the then police chief, I guess it was Howard Scarry, who was the police chief prior to Kevin Vogel, met behind closed doors with city manager Martine Bernal and then mayor, I guess it was Mike Rotkin, and head of Parks and Rec then, Danette Shoemaker, and decided just as a decree, an edict, to decide suddenly that the area around City Hall was a, quote, park, and therefore could be closed at night, and people who were there holding up political signs could be cited or arrested for being there, simply just holding up a sign there after 10 o'clock at night. And that's still the law at City Hall. Vogel has made no attempt to change it. The Santa Cruz City Council has made no attempt to change it. Council members Lane and Postner, when they were in power, have made no attempt to change it. And new council members Sandy Brown and Chris Crone, the great progressives, neither have they made any attempts to change it or made any public statements about it. Though I think they may be sympathetic, but I am quite skeptical of sympathies that actually aren't manifested in ways where the community can see and can see actual actions on their part, like calls in a public way, press conferences, organizing efforts, motions at city council, which they could do. There are two of them. All you need is a person to make the motion and another person to second it. I guess you got to get it on the agenda, but I don't know that would be so difficult. In any case, I've known Kevin Vogel for, well, since the year after he got on the police force. He was one of the police officers who probably arrested me in one of the first arrests I experienced at City Hall for supposedly disrupting a city council meeting, but something it was never, it was either never charged, or at least there was never any conviction for any of the kind. And I was... I've gotten to know, of course, many police officers over the years here who I like to say, as human beings, they're, you know, like anybody else, except that once you put on this, the uniform, then you arm up with the weapons and you subject yourself to the discipline of the police department, you become something other than an ordinary person. You become essentially an instrumentality, a factotum, a cog in a machine, which is, at least as far as homeless and poor people goes, concerned with enforcing laws like the anti-homeless sleeping ban that makes it illegal to sleep after 11 o'clock at night. I've never heard Vogel or any other police chief come out against that law. And it seems to me that that, from the very beginning, discredits the whole basis on which the police department is policing in terms of how it's treating poor people. If you're going to believe it's a legitimate crime to arrest someone or cite someone or harass someone for sleeping at night when they have no legal places to go, then you are essentially part of a sort of a homeless removal squad. You're part of a group that is routinely and systematically denying basic human rights. And it's just wrong. But I've said this before. I've talked about Kevin Vogel and just a couple of the incidents that have come up. He was a beat cop when I was doing a lot of organizing on the streets on Pacific Avenue before the earthquake. And he and, I guess, Officer Pruger at the time were colleagues, and they were sort of, I don't think they were particularly well liked by poor people. But a decade later, when Vogel was sergeant at arms at City Hall, he has a position that I guess sergeant now, is it Lieutenant Bush? I think he's been promoted, perhaps, or am I thinking of, I guess I'm not thinking of Flippo, who's been promoted to deputy chief. But he was the person, you know, that was supposed to keep the unruly homeless in line at city council. And he actually was quite candid about telling us when the mayor had instructed him to specifically target a particular homeless activist, in this case a guy called James Ney, when activists were protesting that the mayor, and I believe the mayor at that time was Keith Sugar, a supposed liberal or progressive, had cut back public comment time. And Sugar had apparently instructed Vogel, according to him, to specifically target this particular activist and have him arrested, which he was. And his property was seized. He was held in a room throughout the council meeting. I don't think he was ever charged with anything. It's been a favorite practice of city council mayors to arrest people. It's happened to me numerous times, and then not charge them anything. But what happens, of course, is it frightens other people. It also denies you the access to speak there, not that they would necessarily listen to you, but it's also a way of speaking to the community, and that's really the main point, or of modeling for people the fact that you don't have to resist. I mean, you don't have to submit, and you can resist sort of the sweep and flow of the city council's current mythology about a variety of issues ranging from landlords to poor people outside to proper practices for the police to breaks for real estate developers. You don't have to be silent while injustice is happening, even in your own town, even if it's considered a little uppity. So anyway, there's a sort of a puff piece about Kevin Vogel on the website. I don't know who the new police chief is going to be. It's a sort of a relief that Steve Clark, who was deputy chief, has either retired or moved on, or I'm sure what his situation is, moved to another agency. But really, there's not really a lot of prospects for a meaningful change in the police department that I'm aware of. And I don't want to seem overly gloomy, just trying to be realistic. And in order to cheer everybody up, I think I'm going to put on a little music so we can, well, take a break from this perhaps familiar litany of sad things.
to pursue. But never have I seen in all my wandering a man as handsome as you. And if I had riches fit for a king, I'd send you long and loaded caravans. But all I possess are the poems I sing and the strings that hold the passion in my hands. And I am tossing and turning, freezing and burning, weeping and yearning for you. I am tossing turning, freezing and dying, weeping and yearning for you. And if I could be the pipes that you play, your breath would move through me and make me cry. And I've held the pleasures of many a day, only your kiss can make me satisfied. And I am tossing and turning, freezing and burning, weeping and yearning for you. I am tossing and turning, freezing and burning, weeping and yearning for you. And if I could be you hunt, I'd offer my body to your bone. And I'd rather be a hound at your feet than a queen on someone else's golden throne. Than a queen on someone else's golden throne. And I am tossing and turning, freezing and burning, weeping and yearning for you. I am tossing and turning, freezing and burning, weeping and yearning for you. Your brilliant green eyes are the pools of the skies. Your tenor voice so sweet and so true. And I think I'd grow
was the voice of the beautiful Phoenix. You may have seen her in years past playing on Pacific Avenue in the mall before she was driven away by tickets. She used to play the harp, as you can hear from the music. I don't know the name of that song. It's you can find her at phoenixpepperwood@gmail.com, and that was recorded 3 years ago, January, February, in Taos, New Mexico, and written by her, I guess, that tossing and turning song. I'm going to play a few more by her throughout the show. I played these before, but not recently. And I saw her a couple years ago back in Santa Cruz briefly. And I don't know if she got a ticket this time as she came through, and that She spoke to me about it, but she has in the past, and she's a regular supporter of real changes in the anti-performer laws along Pacific Avenue, originally designed, of course, as anti-homeless laws, but then catching up performers in their web because they can't use the H word in these kinds of things, or they risk constitutional problems with even conservative judges who, for example, much as they might like Trump or Trumpism, even if it's not done by Trump, but someone like Pence, they can't really do it and still pretend to be have judicial impartiality. So you have to, you know, have a kind of a pause before they ban 100,000 people from the country, and the kind of edict that Trump issued in his gloves-off approach to things, his kind of bald fuck-you approach, which in a way is kind of refreshing because it's what both the Democrats and the Republicans do in a more genteel way. He just sort of strips away the horse shit. And that's why it's kind of it's amusing, and also, I don't know if I'd say infuriating, because it's happened so much that you can't really stay angry about it because it becomes a part of the scene. But to see Democrats denouncing Trump, and Republicans too, before, of course, he won the election and before he won the Republican nomination, when there was just, it was all the establishment of the upper level of the billionaires sort of dismissing the lower middle level of the entrepreneur billionaires who, you know, who are, don't want to see these upstarts denouncing, the neoliberal policies. Trump, of course, has been a big opponent of neoliberal policies, or so he says, and indeed he stopped the Trans-Pacific Partnership, as well as has been denouncing NAFTA. So that stuff is interesting enough that leftists have been opposing too, but you don't hear them giving much credit to Trump for any of this stuff, and I'm not going to give him a lot of credit either, given what else he does, but it's also important, I think, to see which groups are for him and which are against him. And, of course, I'm jumping from Phoenix, who I'd love to see back in town, to my favorite demons. And those aren't really Trump and Pence, but they're the local people who, if they don't know better, we should teach them better. Because it's our city here that's being, that continues to be treated as a kind of a very regressive community, but masquerades as a very progressive community around civil rights for poor people. So I got a phone call right before airtime from an old-time council watcher, Ed Davidson. And Ed is a fellow that used to speak quite regularly at City Council. He may still be doing that. I'm not sure. He's knows a lot about affordable housing. Regular City Council attender. And because there is a City Council meeting coming up next week on the 14th, Valentine's Day, for all of you lovers, where I think Keith McHenry has pointed out that there is a flyer being circulated that encourages the City Council to consider meth distribution as an answer to dealing with scofflaws who are violating the sleeping ban law. And, of course, this is a morbid joke, but it's in a way, it's on target. It's been proposed for many years, many times, as a sort of a... an example of how absurd the sleeping ban law is, and how indifferent the City Council authorities are to any kind of meaningful changes for it. But I am going to give Ed a call, and I think I'm going to have to, however, check his number. I thought I had it here, and I know I wrote it down before I left, but unfortunately I don't seem to have it where it's supposed to be. So let's take another brief break while I fumble around and try and find it, and you can tap your feet to the music while I stumble and fumble and bumble here.
Cutting your wages down, putting you deeper in the hole. In the long race down to the bottom, on the fast track for control. They're marketing the water, getting profits from the sink. Privatizing basic needs, they can't afford a drink. This isn't trade, this is slavery. Subsidizing wealth with poverty. Tearing the land apart, loading forests into trains, justifying long-term devastation with short-term gains. They're jacking medicine prices with the pharmacies stacked. They're patenting local plants and making people buy them back. This isn't trade, this is slavery. Subsidizing wealth with poverty. This isn't trade, this is slavery. Subsidizing wealth with poverty. They're making people servants, locking them in debt, stealing their resources with military threats. They'll buy and sell this whole world with the dollars they possess. By the time they finish profiting, there won't be nothing left. This isn't trade, this is slavery. Subsidizing wealth with poverty. There ain't no end to this bloody chain of poverty and debt. Well, they call it free trade, I call it legal theft. Manifest destiny, the invisible fist of greed. Searching for open markets to plant the poison seed. This isn't trade, this is slavery. Subsidizing wealth with poverty. This isn't trade, this is slavery. Subsidizing wealth with poverty. Subsidizing wealth with poverty.
And that was Ryan Harvey, Legal Theft. You can find it online. Played it before, probably play it again. And on the line with me, the phone line, is Ed Davidson. Hi, Ed.
Hello, Robert. How you been?
Not bad. The studio isn't too well heated, but I'm bundled up. How are you doing?
Okay. Hanging in there.
Now, you called me to bring to my attention a number of items coming up on the City Council's February 14th agenda. There's actually an afternoon session that starts at 2 o'clock and presumably runs till 5 or 6 whenever they shut down, and no evening session. What issues were on your mind when you saw that agenda?
Well, one of them has to do with a county-wide homeless committee to control the homelessness or something like that, and I thought that might interest you. It's just the appointment of the mayor and the city manager to that committee. I'm not quite sure what they're supposed to be doing or what it's all about, but I thought you might.
Yeah, you're talking about the Homelessness Governance Ad Hoc Committee appointments.
Yeah, that's it.
And it's I'm looking at the staff report. It's their way of avoiding doing anything substantive around homeless, either police abuses against homeless people or just lack of shelter or letting homeless people create their own shelter. And it's also their way of maintaining this fiction that the reason Santa Cruz isn't doing anything is because it's the county's responsibility, it's not the city's, even though it's the city that has got all the laws, or many of the laws, and much of the enforcement criminalizing homeless people and giving them these tickets and stay-away orders and infraction crimes and so forth.
Right. Okay. Well, I just thought you might be interested in...
Yeah, for those who are interested, that's item number 10, I believe, on the consent agenda, which means you If you come in, and unless you can get a council member to pull that item off to talk about it in more detail, you can only reference it with a whole bunch of other items. The next one interests me, too. First Alarm Services for Downtown Garages. I think they want to throw more money at the First Alarm. We call, some call it First Attack. Some call it False Alarm. It's this the thugs that run around at, and run homeless people off or attempt to do that, or used to anyway. I think it's more the Rangers that have taken over that position.
Right. I don't know what their plans are for that. I just know that they're putting, what is it, $90,000 into...
Yeah, it's 90,000. Well, the summary is First Alarm Services for Downtown Garages, budget adjustment, appropriating funds and amending the 2017 budget in the amount of 90,000. And there are, it looks like, there are 9 files on this budget adjustment. I'm not sure why. There's email, there's photos. I've got to look this over. It looks like it might be interesting. Maybe I can follow this in more detail on Sunday when I do a morning show. And I appreciate you bringing this up, Ed, but this hasn't been something that's a major passion of yours. It's more like more my kind of thing, right?
Yeah, sure. But that's why I called, just to see whether you plan to attend. There are a couple other things there that are on affordable housing and other, you know, kick the can down the road kind of issues that this council is notorious for. I mean, we're not going to do anything about affordable housing, basically, except a little bit at the edges here and there.
Well, what you're talking about is, it looks like, item 18, which is not consent agenda, which means they do have to allow you to talk for 2 minutes. Actually, I guess they might say 3 minutes. They limit discussion on consent agenda items to 2 minutes as a total for all the consent agenda items. And on the rest of the city council agenda, which includes general business and public hearings, which there are a number of them, looks like all of them crammed under the afternoon agenda, they will give you 3 minutes. But I'm looking at this Affordable Housing Community Outreach and Engagement Plan. Have you read over the stuff? Do you know that?
Nope, not yet. I don't know whether I'll get to do it before the meeting, but I just, it, this is kick the can down the road stuff, as far as I'm concerned. I've been following the housing elements of the city since 85. Mm-hmm. And Carl Foytick, who you may remember was the big homeless advocate back in those days, in the 80s, and he insisted that they put a phrase in there about working families. The priority should be on working families to get affordable housing. And so that's been part of the housing elements. Every 8 or 10 years, whatever they update it, they just keep putting that same thing in there. And that's our biggest problem is I'm a single, but it's the families with kids who can't find affordable housing in Santa Cruz, anywhere near their jobs, and they're the ones who are forcing the excessive commuting over to Monterey County and beyond, because they can't find housing in Santa Cruz. They have to get onto Highway 1 every rush hour to get to the home or to work or to school, whatever. And that's pathetic. They haven't done anything since 1985, anything very realistic.
I mean, did they do anything in 1985 or prior that you noticed?
No, they had, you know, some low-cost housing projects that were in the works, and the first one was the Neary Lagoon, and that was around the earthquake. It was approved before the earthquake, and it was built after the earthquake. And that project, it was below the minimum density for the zone district. It was within 100 feet of the wetlands of the Neary Lagoon itself, and they put it on fill, and they in the report that they underestimated, they put it in cubic feet instead of cubic yards of fill, so it was less by a factor of 27 the amount of fill that was going in there, and that of course raised the floodplain, the flood hazard to the area around Neary Lagoon. I hope they're okay this week, certainly the tule plants, which fill the lagoon now, and they've had to cut them back every few years. A ton of material, and it doesn't stop the tules from coming back, so they're not uprooting them.
Ed, I'm going to read some of this agenda report to you, and I want you to comment on it because you may have some thoughts that enlighten us. I mean, to me, it's kind of obscure. This is the motion to implement and authorize a staff report, staff support of a 2017 outreach strategy to engage the Santa Cruz community on the history, drivers, and potential solutions. Sounds like they're just one of these consultant groups going to spend their time babbling at each other, to the local housing crisis, with an expected launch in March 2017, and include $10,000 in the mid-year budget. And it says, background, most California, including the Central Coast region, is currently in the grips of an historic housing crisis, with all but 6 of the 25 least affordable counties in the nation residing in California. Affordability is determined by comparing counties in terms of the proportion of family income assigned to housing costs on average. Santa Cruz community is not immune. As late as December 2016, it ranked third least affordable in the U.S., with average home prices exceeding $805,000, 15% increase from the year before. With rents and home prices rising at a faster rate than wages, the impacts are felt citywide and particularly hard among mid to low income and vulnerable populations. Harder to survive here. University students having difficulty. I'm skipping here. Although the city has created over 1,700 affordable units, whatever that means, the affordability crisis poses a significant threat to our quality of life. Let me ask you and stop right there. Tell us about the 1,700 affordable units. Is that a real stat? What does it mean?
Well, there were four main projects over the years. One is the Neary Lagoon, which I was getting to, and then you had the Nueva Vista, the project in Beach Flats that
the Dolphin Lease sellout and destruction of the housing there. Yeah, I am aware. We fought that one for quite a while.
Right, they demolished more units than they created. Right. So,
and they also dumped a lot of people out who got paid off, but not paid off in any way with enough to help them buy back into housing in the city, as far as I know.
Right, right. But, the relocation was a scam. The relocation firm got more money than anybody else, and they didn't do very much. It was just public money going at the worst possible time. I mean, the worst possible way to expand the amount of affordable housing. And the one on where the Ocean Chevrolet used to be, across from the bicycle shop there. That project came in at the same time as a private project on at the foot of Graham Hill Road. It's a condo project about the same size, and the units in the condo project cost less, even with the commission for the sales and all that, and the profit for the developer. It cost less per unit than the public housing project the redevelopment did. So
we've got Nueva Vista, which was the Dolphin Lee project. We've got the Neary Lagoon, and there's this one, it's across from the Yan Flower restaurant. Is that the one you're talking about?
All I can think is
it's about a block or two from the Sub Rosa Cafe, which I'm familiar with, or from the Saturn Cafe.
It's the site of the Ocean Chevrolet.
What's the fourth one? Do you know?
Well, sort of the the artist housing at
the tannery?
Tannery Center.
So are these? If you add these four together, do they actually involve 1,700 affordable units?
Those should be about 300 or 400. The affordable units are things like the Section 8 development that I was in, which was a federally funded support of the tenants. It's Section 8 housing. And then there's some senior housing and some special needs housing and so on. But I think half of them were Section 8 projects, which no longer, Section 8 program is no longer available for anybody to get a Section 8. Have a voucher. I mean, I'm eligible to move to another apartment that takes Section 8, and no landlords do that anymore.
No people do it. Now, so of these so-called 1,700 affordable units, how many of them are actually available to even low-income and slightly above low-income people?
Basically none. for practical purposes, the Section 8 program, it's like a 10-year waiting list. So, I mean, what does that mean? Or a 3-year waiting list, even. Now, I myself want to go I'm on a second floor. My walking is a problem. I don't want to have to go to stairs all the time. And my landlord would not allow me to move to a ground floor apartment with my Section 8 voucher. They're basically trying to get rid of the Section 8 people, and if I can't go the stairs, then I'm going to have to move anyway. So that's their attitude.
Have they been able to move out more Section 8 people than yourself from your housing?
I don't know how many, but I know they do move out eventually.
Is there any opportunity, as I've been talking to the Santa Cruz Tenants Organizing Committee recently, new groups that are forming to fight for rent control and fight against landlord abuses, is there any indication in your housing unit or in other housing units you know of that there's any pushback against this kind of profiteering?
Well, the Section 8 program that our complex was built with, was rehabbed with, was a 15-year lease. And when the 15 years were up, we got through the city and some negotiation, we got the guy to allow anybody who has a Section 8 voucher to keep their lease and just, I guess forever, but for about 5 years, they were okay with that. And then they took the position that no more Section 8 leases, and those few who are still here, they can stay where they are, but they're not doing anything for you.
Now, do you feel comfortable saying the people who run your apartment or who profit from it, are they large landlords in Santa Cruz, or just this one particular place? Or
no, they own other properties, but the management firm here is just not cooperative. I had an accident and I got hit by a car, and I had walking problems, and they couldn't care less that I have trouble getting up to the second floor. And it's a burden, and they never would allow me to even talk to anybody in the ownership group. They're the management, and what they say is final. Don't go asking to go over their heads. And it's an attitude, and
there's no solidarity among other tenants. Tenants are pretty much isolated from each other.
Well, I don't know. They're just interested in getting new tenants who are willing to pay the...
No, I mean among existing tenants. You and gotten together with the tenants and had a rousing meeting and saying, let's stand up against this crap and that sort of thing.
No, we're not...
Not that kind of group
not
there.
Not big enough, and I don't think it's desirable, because the thing is this fall... I have an annual inspection by the Housing Authority, and I failed. And the reason I failed is I'm in the have the same carpets that I've had for 22 years, and it's never been, you know, shampooed as it might have been. But it didn't pass inspection. And they brought somebody in, a carpet cleaning firm, and they said, no, these carpets are shot. We can't fix them. So the only thing they could think of was to put linoleum down on the second floor, or vinyl, whatever. And I had to move everything out of my living room, and have no help for that, and so on and so forth. So it's been a...
And is this management firm simply, you know, your building, or have you found that this, or do they manage other properties, or is this...
They do manage a couple of other properties
You want to say who they are, or do you feel...
No, I don't know which ones they are.
But do you know the name of the firm? Do you want to say that? You don't have to if you don't want to.
I can't remember. First Management or something like that.
Okay.
And if I weren't still in the apartment, they'd be yelped by me. I can assure you.
You'd be going online to talk about them. Yeah. Well, we're talking with Ed Davidson, who's a longtime council watcher. You're a former planner here in Santa Cruz, right?
Right. It's been a while since I worked for Santa Cruz County. I did work for a year for City of Scotts Valley, and that was about the same time as we started with the housing element in Santa Cruz City, and we had the same thing in Scotts Valley, that they said, we're going to meet the affordable housing numbers. We're supposed to produce this many, and that's our goal, and then of course they don't build any.
Has this problem come up in other cities you're aware of, and have tenants or other activists been able to fight it in certain ways that you might suggest that if we had the person power, we could do this in Santa Cruz?
I've been associated and around other groups over the years, and they've all tried and failed to make a dent in the problem.
This is in Santa Cruz you're talking about.
Yes.
But I'm talking about, were there other cities where there actually was success?
Let me take the two biggest problem areas right now, and that is San Jose and the Santa Clara area, Silicon Valley, let's call it, and San Francisco.
Okay.
They've got enormous housing crises, as bad as Santa Cruz, because the cost of rents in both of those cities are 50% higher than Santa Cruz rents, which is part of the reason we're getting commuters from Silicon Valley taking up our rental, because they can afford the high rents. And there have been some very active groups and let's call it city attention to the problem. They've been proactive in trying to deal with the enormous rent problems that the working families have, service employees of any kind. Now,
what have they done that has been ameliorated things?
Physical housing, putting money into housing, getting developers, co-partners and with the city, and very active housing programs. And they're trying very hard, but San Francisco is just still lagging behind in their affordability. And I should say also that both of those cities have rent control. They were grandfathered in when the landlords were able to get the legislature to outlaw rent control. So as much as we'd like to have it, and these groups say, let's do it, you can't do it because the legislature killed rent control.
Now, there have been some recent developments in, I guess, Richmond and Mountain View, where rent control has been voted in by the voters, although it's of a limited kind because, as you mentioned, the Costa-Hawkins legislative landlord-pushed ban on new rent control, which essentially what, it bans all rent control on any houses built after 1979 or something, or what the, I'm not sure what the actual date is.
Somewhere in there.
I'm just wondering what kinds of steps you would urge the Santa Cruz City Council to take rather than this rather cheesy, I mean, I've got a bias against the City Council, so I don't want to, I want to be able to look at this on its merits, but this proposal coming up for affordable housing on Tuesday, a community outreach and engagement plan, what should they be doing rather than what they are proposing, which is essentially $10,000 budget so they can conduct an outreach effort or an outreach strategy, blah, blah, blah.
Two or three things in the works right now. They're pushing for high density, higher residential densities along the bus corridors. That is Mission Street and SoCal and Ocean Street, I suppose, to try and get, you know, the co-op commercial residential mixed use projects on those streets. Unfortunately, every one of them that they've built so far of these mixed-use residential and commercial zones, every one of them has been condominium ownership. The issue right now is that we are not building strictly rental housing. We're building condos in our multifamily zones. And we're also building hotels and sports arenas, but that's beside the point. Every mixed-use project on Pacific, on Mission, on Ocean, on whatever, wherever, they're all condo, and you don't get middle-income families or working families into ownership condos.
When was the last time there was actually money put into housing that wasn't condos that would serve...
Well, there is a project that was approved. It's about 5 years old, and it hasn't broken ground. It's on Ocean, just south of Broadway, kind of backs up to the Art League building there. And that's quite a formidable project if it ever gets built. But
how much is the city, how much city money is going into condos compared with, let's say, rental housing?
Not too much. Those are all private sector decisions.
And how does this compare with, let's say, San Jose and San Francisco, or even smaller cities that have the same problem?
They're building more strictly rental units because the money's there, you know. It's profitable to build market rate rental housing.
So you're saying it's not profitable in Santa Cruz to build rental market rate rental?
It is. With the way rents are on the private sector, and with the 15% inclusionary low income units, it's still profitable.
So why isn't it being done, Ed?
Because the condos are more profitable.
Uh-huh.
That's why.
So the city is being sold out to wealthier newcomers, is what you're
talking about. I would say that in density, I would have the density if you're condos than if you're rentals, so that you get an incentive for people to not put condos in. I think that's one of my solutions, is to make it less profitable to go condo than to go rental.
Has that been done anywhere else?
I'm not sure.
Hmm. We're talking with Ed Davidson. Ed, let me skip ahead because we're in a little bit of a time crunch here. Another thing happening at the City Council, I notice, and it's perhaps a minor thing, but I notice that oral communications, which is the period of time when people can actually speak about any subject, such as the one you're talking about now, I mean, you can talk about this sort of when it comes up on the agenda, but if you really want to bring up this in a sort of a new and clear way, or it's not on the agenda, you have to speak at oral communications and usually cram your speech into a 2-minute period. Usually that's at a time certain, generally, more or less, around 5 o'clock. It's been in the afternoon since they moved it from the 7 o'clock evening session.
Right.
They don't usually have evening sessions anymore. But now I notice on the agenda for February 14th, there is no mention of the oral communications other than it's one of a sort of a at the end of a series of items. There, previously on agendas last year, you would see there will be an oral communications period. It'll be as close to 5 o'clock as possible. We can't guarantee it, but we'll try to do it around 5, and you've got 2 minutes to speak unless the mayor decides, you know, that you can't or some such thing. Now there's no such addition to the agenda. What do you make of that?
I think they just flubbed it. Some explanation of it should be noted in there. You know,
I think it's a deliberate attempt to give more power to the mayor to essentially hold oral communication.
Well, that's what I'm going to use. I'm going to go for oral communications, and I'm going to talk about that. I think it's a contempt of the public for the council to limit
for sure
the public speaking on both agenda items, consent items, and oral communications. They just don't care to hear from the public on these issues, and by limiting time, they screw themselves because they get bad projects and bad results because they didn't listen. I remember, and I love Catherine Byers, but one time I remember she had typed out her position on her vote, and that was. Obviously, she typed it before the public hearing happened, which means she didn't care what the public said public hearing.
I think that's generally the case. I think they also follow the staff pretty dutifully. What I'm saying, though, Ed, is in this particular situation, not only are they cutting your public comment time short, but they're putting it at an uncertain time so that you have to sit through the entire city council meeting in order to know or have some access to television or internet to know when to come in and talk. And even then, you might miss it. Instead of saying, it's at 5 o'clock, it's the beginning of the council meeting, it's the beginning of the evening session. And this is new. This is something that maybe they did it last 2 weeks ago, but it hasn't been done throughout the last year. And I'm not that I have anything to say that's really positive that, you know, that, as you point out, they're not listening to you anyway. And that's another question I was about to ask you, which is, do you feel in your 30 years or more of trying to speak to the council about substantive issues on affordable housing, you've ever gotten them to pay any attention to you?
Not in a long time. Not in a long time. I mean, I have my little speech about condos and versus ownership versus rental.
Have you had any other success in terms of, even though the council doesn't give a shit and hasn't been listening, have other people been educated, do you think, through what you've said at City Council?
Oh, sure. No, I get strangers who watch on TV and come up to me and say, keep it up, because you're keeping them, trying to keep them honest. And so maybe there's a little bit of help in their pre-development.
Well, I'm going to roll it. But is there anything you want to kind of summarize, or let's put it this way: is there anything that we haven't covered that you want to mention briefly?
No, go for the next, and I'll see you Tuesday.
Hey, I don't know if I'll be there Tuesday, but I'm glad that you're raising these issues here and wherever you can.
Right. Well, my biggest issue is the contempt for the public.
Big time.
And cutting people off from, 2 minutes you can't get into any subject, really. And I will remind you one time, when the first La Bahia came through, and there was over an hour of a presentation and the staff producing, and there was not a lot of time left for public input, and they started out, and all the labor unions were fighting, and that had nothing to do with the building. And I was letting them go first on speaking, and they never got to the issues of the problems with the building itself. And I had 45 seconds to go into the issues of parking and all kinds of issues. And we beat them at the Coastal Commission.
Right on.
City Council was so apoplexy over how the hell did we, And the reason is because you never got to listen to the issues that the Coastal Commission had to consider, and they couldn't pass it because it was over height, and it was over dense, and it was inadequate parking, and, you know, just a whole bunch of issues that they never talked about.
Did they learn anything from that, Ed?
Who knows? Nah.
I don't think so. But yeah, listen, thank you. And
okay.
For those who want to reach you, are you online? Do you have a blog of any kind?
At the moment, I'm offline, and all you got is my phone number.
You want me to give out your phone number?
Sure, 423-9294.
Thanks, Ed.
Okay, Robert. See you.
Bye-bye. And that was Ed Davidson. Phone line here is open in case you have any thoughts about the issue of housing and the city council's failure to address it, or perhaps its success. We've had people on this show, Paul Wagner, I remember from a couple decades ago, who said was a big fan of the city council's, or some of the city council's, actions in supposedly creating affordable housing. I'm no expert on the subject, but I've yet to be convinced they're doing diddly squat. And seeing how they treat the poorest, I also tend to notice that that's happening for, I think, the majority, not just the poor. And that's why it's too bad the majority and the poor don't all get together and do what they need to do, both locally and nationally. And that means overthrowing existing institutions as they currently exist, I think. Let's hear a little more music.
She left the city shy of 17. She said she had to learn to feel. 'Cause mama never taught the difference between right and wrong. She said, I gotta find out what is real. So cross your fingers. Right to paradise, that will lead us when we get to learn. 'Cause it's a
And that was Phoenix and another one of her, wow, lyrical songs. On the line with me is activist Keith McHenry of Food Not Bombs. Hey, Keith.
Hi, how's it going?
Okay. How about you? What are you doing out there? Something? Are you indoors, outdoors, or somewhere in between?
I am out indoors, and that's exciting.
Well, I know the last time I saw you were outdoors, we were both outside the city council chambers on Tuesday night where the Freedom Sleepers were just picking up some food from Food Not Bombs, and you had your literature table there. I noticed the yellow tape, which was keeping people from being around the large areas, was not there. I guess the rain was kind of keeping people out of those areas. Has the city council adopted a whole new strategy of tolerance and love and peace? What's going on there?
I don't know. Yeah, they didn't even put up their little yellow sign saying they couldn't be there. And that could be because the sergeant of, there's a new sergeant of arms, and maybe it's his personal thing, or maybe they just are giving up or something. I don't know.
It could be a whole new liberal mayor, Mayor Cynthia Chase, who knows. But, I mean, yet later that night, the Freedom Sleepers still ran into a little conflict with rangers and police. You stayed the night, right?
Yeah, it got to be pretty fun, actually. There was, like, six first alarmers. I think it was six. Yeah, six. And they, the security company, and they came and tried to get us, wake people up. But we told people, as they went around, me and Abby Samuels, we went around saying that they didn't need to, no one needed to move, no one needed to wake up. It was just first alarm, just false alarm, that's what we call them. And so nothing happened. That was good. And then they called the police, but nobody came originally. And then later on, that was maybe around 4 o'clock. Then later on.
4 o'clock in the morning, right?
In the morning, yeah. Then the guy came by with an officer screaming with his megaphone from the car, and that we had to wake up, blah, blah, blah. That was, and then shining lights on everybody, but people ignored that. And then eventually a bunch of rangers came, and so that was interesting, and tried to hassle us. So, yeah, it was all in all a good time, a very good time.
And did anyone get any tickets or citations?
Max got a citation from one of the people, one of the rangers. Basically, all he got was a ticket on his car because he was yelling at the ranger and used a bad word. So that was the whole event of that.
He was ticketed for bad wording, a bad mouthing, a ranger?
He actually got a parking ticket for bad wording, for saying a bad word. Yeah.
What bad word did he say?
I can't say. It's on the radio.
Oh, but you can. This is free radio.
Like I said, one of the seven bad ones, like fuck. I'm pretty sure that's what it was.
Now, was it fuck,
that
piss, shit, motherfucker, cocksucker, or tits? Which of those words was it?
It was just fuck.
I see. Okay, well.
So anyway, there you had it. Yeah, and that officer is a mixed bag. His name is John, and he actually comes by and gets Food Not Bombs flyers, and he occasionally donates $20 to Food Not Bombs, but he also is seen to hassle homeless people and take their belongings and stuff. So, but he does, generally speaking, have a little more compassionate than a lot of people and that we run into out there. But the thing that was of most interest is Albert or something like that. He was the head ranger. He was really a drag, and he hassled people big time, went around in circles hassling people. And
what do you mean by hassling people? What did he do?
Oh, he would try. He'd go, get up, you got to get up. I'm going to give you a citation if you don't get up. And he'd be really aggressive about it. And then we would just go, look, at you know, the person's sleeping, you don't need to bother him.
Well, they weren't sleeping illegally, were they? I mean, they were. This was, well, what time of day was this?
This was at about 8 o'clock.
So it was at a time when sleeping is illegal prior to 8:30.
Correct.
Now, was
yes.
It, but they have not been giving out tickets for sleeping, just been threatening people for that, maybe sometimes giving out tickets for being in a closed area after 10 o'clock at night until 6 in the morning, right?
Yeah, that's all, the only thing I've been seeing that recently is that. So I think that's pretty interesting that they generally, yeah, haven't been too crazy about that. But it is weird. It's a lot of cigarette. What Abby and I have seen are, you know, smoking, sitting, things like that. That seems to be the big stuff that happens. It's kind of weird.
You mean smoking and sitting tickets.
Yeah, and a lot of just general harassment of people.
I got an email from an attorney up north this evening from the group that's doing the lawsuit, a class action lawsuit up in the Bay Area against Caltrans. They want folks down here to send them reports of any people whose property was seized or other kinds of harassment are being subjected to by Caltrans. Have you heard of anything like that happening? I know Caltrans does not usually cover City Hall, so the Freedom Sleepers probably are not a part of that target. But you also do a Food Not Bombs meal twice a week near the main post office, 4 to 6 Saturday and Sunday, and you may be getting reports of other kinds of harassment happening in the city, or has everything become hunky-dory?
It's generally a lot of hassles. For people living on the streets. And the Caltrans, I can imagine that happens over by, on the levee, but I do know there's been occasion where people have had stuff confiscated, like by the lumber yard and, sort of where River and Highway 1 come together, 9 and Highway 1. But I haven't heard any specific news about that in recent days.
Mm-hmm. Heard any reports of any hassles? Any reports of any problems at the Homeless Lack of Services Center or at the Winter Shelter Program or the Association of Faith Communities or the Warming Center? And was the Warming Center open on Tuesday night? It certainly was coming down pretty hard in the rain.
I don't know if it was open. I didn't hear anybody say they were on their way to that. On Sunday, we've had some people come by bummed out that they couldn't eat with us because they were late to go to the shelter, I guess the faith shelter. I'm not sure which shelter they were going to. It wasn't the River Street, though. And then also there was... it's really loud right here. The other thing was, we did hear from one of the nurses, a mental health professional over at the Homeless Lack of Services, that they did do a new thing where you can't park over there, and that has caused a lot of trouble. So it's like a permit parking only, and that just started up.
Are you talking about a 24-hour ban on parking on the nearby streets or parking on the private property of the Homeless Lack of Service Center, do you know?
On the streets around near there. You know how people just park around there and stay asleep in their cars?
That would be the implementation of the 24-hour parking ban that I and some others were opposing. Actually, it was 2 years ago. When they actually passed it, we tried to appeal it. They claimed we couldn't. And then they didn't put up any signs for a year. Instead, signs showed up around the Washington Street area, which is near Loudoun Nelson, where they created, I guess, the first ever no parking without a permit for throughout the 24-hour period, not just during the day or not just during the wee hours of the night. Currently, the permit parking program says you can park only for 2 hours unless you have a permit during the day, and then not at all unless you have a permit at night, which is kind of the anti-homeless component of that. But it's interesting to hear. If you hear more, I'd like to know more details.
Yeah, I just heard that, you know, there was an email put out to us from one of the people that supports us that works in there, who's a staff person, and she was really upset about it. That's all I know.
Now I'm going to be playing. I think I'll be playing an interview that I had with you a couple of days ago, and I guess we don't need to go over that same territory. But I take it you've heard nothing new from the health department about you better get a permit or we're going to shut down the Food Not Bombs meals, yada yada yada.
No, nothing like about that. Getting a lot of. I've had a journalist call today about the city's city council's consideration of distributing methamphetamine to the homeless, and that journalist claimed that they are being swamped with phone calls about this. The city council, like, the staff at city council office just getting overwhelmed with calls. So that is really interesting, and it's starting to make a certain amount of global media around that issue. So that is kind of one of the more intriguing things, and pretty excited about all that.
Are you going to be bringing a group with you, a homeless demand meth group, to the city council coming up on Tuesday, or possibly how?
It won't be so much. Yeah, it might be something similar to that, or maybe, you know, like give us meth or give us sleep, something like that.
Give me justice or give me meth. Liberty or give me meth, that sort of thing.
Something of that nature. So that would be the one thing I would say is the possibility.
Well, it's fun to hear, I guess.
Yes, it should be fun.
I mean, I would have called it a tired old joke, but I guess if you push it far enough, it can get even funnier.
Yeah, it could get really interesting.
Anything new coming up that you want to speak about in the next week or two that, are you planning to supervise the restoration of performance spaces downtown, perhaps?
I may get around to that. I don't know. I've been so overwhelmed. It's been really crazy. I'll probably do something like that. I'm going to definitely, there'll be more things going on. I really hope people come by the Food Not Bombs table and get some flyers on Saturday for the mess distribution flyers and get them up, or just call and get a hold of some from us. So that's really important to get that word out. Or if you get a Facebook post, please share it, because we need to get everybody in on the February 14th City Council mess distribution dialogue thing, because that's just beautiful. And really, I think people are starting to get the idea that you do have, like, choices now, either methamphetamine or letting people go to sleep.
Well, you could have, if you can't, I would suggest to you that you bring sleeping bags to City Hall and have a tweak-in,
you could do that.
You might do some, I'm not sure how you can show, I would just say tweak on, so to speak.
Right.
Yes.
Could be something like that.
Well, let me know, though, if anything actually... I mean, I know that people have been reluctant to engage in any direct civil disobedience, perhaps present company accepted here. But I've always thought it might be wise to bring some sleeping bags to City Council and, go to sleep there. I don't know. I mean, that's an old line. It's been done before. It will result probably in a demand you leave and then a trespass citation if you don't. It has its implications. We tried to, we raised this issue when the first Freedom Sleepout began a year and a half ago. And the problem, of course, we had is that nobody really, I guess the civil disobedience route wasn't one we decided to follow. Instead, we were going to do make the sidewalk a safe place to sleep by just showing up there once a week and doing it that way. I don't know.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, it's always seemed to me to be
everything is pretty fun overall. I mean, I do love this idea. You got to get the word out that about the methamphetamine distribution idea of the city. And I'm there's been a, we had photos that we took of during the confrontation with the officer from Recreation and Parks Department, the one of the rangers, that we've been putting out, and it shows them going around. So we're like, our slogan, part of our slogan, or a slogan, is "Wake up, Santa Cruz." And so that's where we're at now.
Wake up and tweak on, that sort of thing.
Wake up, Santa Cruz.
All right, well,
don't fall asleep on the job.
Well, that's it's very law-abiding of you, Keith. And, of course, aren't you getting some kind of pushback from meth dealers who may feel you're muscling in on their territory, ruining the market?
Well, they like the free advertising so far. So since it hasn't been distributed yet, you know, they're trying to get... People can't wait that long if they're interested. They'll buy now. So that's for sure.
All right, well, we're going to leave this whole ridiculous conversation just where it is, and I'm going to say goodbye.
Okay, take care.
Thanks.
Come gather around, people, and fall to your knees and bow to the red, white, and blue M16s. If you like the riot cops, you'll love the Marines. So be at all of your demonstrations to beat up your bodies and tear down your dreams. For the times, they are not a changing. Come, children and students, abide by our rules. We'll send in the troops to recruit at your schools, and we'll tell you it's noble, we'll tell you it's cool. And you'll hear every word that we're saying, and there's room in the jails if the classrooms are full. For the times, they are not a changing. Come, mothers and fathers and friends of the slain, while we exploit your losses to fund our campaigns. We brought you the war, now there's no one to blame. You best hope the new leader ain't crazy. You can vote how you want, but the outcome's the same. For the times, they are not a changing. Come, senators, congressmen, don't fear a thing. They'll fall in the line behind the new king and accept with a smile what little you bring. They'll forget all the wars you're ranging. The bullets will pierce and the tasers will sting. For the times, they are not a changing. Come, presidents, dictators, take what you will. These people are yours to tax and to kill. If they ever rise up, there's walls you can build. The system is strong, you're maintaining. Just speak with a smile and lie with a skill. For the times, they are not a changing. The paths, they are plain. The choices are clear. If things are to change, friends, it's gotta start here. And if now ain't the time, I hope the time's near. Well, there's still something left that's worth saving. So stand up, fight back to hell with your fear. For the times, they are not a changing.
Yeah, that was Ryan Harvey, The Times They Are Not a-Changin'. You're tuned to the stream of free radio at freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris. This show is Bathrobes, Pierre's Broadsides. Looks like Uncle Dennis will not be coming in tonight. We're going to be doing one of his older shows, but that will still be coming on at 8 o'clock. He does his show From the Cream to the Dregs. So if you like music from the 60s and 70s, that show is your meat, so to speak. So, usually I run into a few street interviews, and this show is going to be no exception. I'm going to play a little something before I leave from other people's voices from out there. And I think we're talking earlier this week. Let me see if I'm... I think we'll have to kind of scout it out as we go. I'm having some little difficult determine exactly what I've got here on this recording device, but let me see what the story is. I think it is... Well, I think it's the last few days. Let's hear what we got. And voices from the street, as ever.
So we're talking with
Levi.
And Levi, what have you found at a certain hour in the business district?
Well, we just are finding a certain clear out, clean up, intense patrols during...
Rouse
certain,
the riffraff?
Maybe. Everyone's... the cars are going around like hawks.
And this was today or just generally?
This was today, most recently. But,
and what did you observe?
A lot of patrol cars, a lot of Rangers doing their routes, and to be expected. But sometimes it can just be a very strong presence, and it's
anybody hassling that you saw?
No one hassling, as long as you don't smoke.
No smoking. You know the rules, son.
Except for that, I don't stay in the downtown area, so I'm. I am an entirely different style camper, you might
say.
You're
an observer of the downtown.
Observer, though. I still see what's going on. Yeah, of course.
We have been talking to...
Levi.
Thank you, Levi.
All right.
Any street reports? Hey, how are you doing?
No news that we're going to put on the air.
Nothing new and exciting?
Well, I may want to say it, but not really.
We've got a secret, but maybe later, folks. Cancer.
Green Day, that band, can blow me.
Yeah, I've never heard Green Day myself.
You don't want to.
Could you sing a few tunes?
I really could because they're so forgettable that I couldn't.
You already forgot them.
I already forgot them.
Right? What have you been talking with?
Nanosecond Brennan.
Thank you, sir. Hi, Mr. Bone, Dreamcatcher. Any comments, Dreamcatcher?
Well, if you don't know how to stay dry around here, I'm the City Hall. If you act right around City Hall, they'll let you stay. But if you start drinking and yelling, well, that ruins it for everybody.
And will you be at City Hall tomorrow night for Freedom Sleep 83?
Yes, I will. But I sleep across the street because I promised the officers that I wouldn't sleep there anymore.
I'm not going to be hopeful. You're not going to break your word to those officers?
No, because...
they may break your head.
Well, no. It's just a matter of getting along.
Getting along.
It's just between me and them.
Okay.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with what's going on there. I'm a supporter. I just can't sleep there. That's all, it's special conditions for me and them, and that's good because it's making me a...
I'm not sure why they would tell you not to do that, but I'll talk about that after you've had your meal.
Because I call it my warrior. I'm kind of the head honcho there, so I kind of officially called it off for me.
I see. So they're trying to pick off the leadership.
Well, if I am that, then... But there is no other place to go, so I don't think that has anything to do with it. But wherever I gather, others gather also because they feel a little safe.
We've been talking with
Dreamcatcher.
Thank you, sir. We'll talk more later.
Okay.
And that's kind of sad to hear, both that the police, although quite understandable, the police are picking off the leaders and telling Dreamcatcher, well, you can't sleep at City Hall. We'll particularly target you or hassle you if you do, but we'll allow you to sleep across the street in an attempt... Very clear politically motivated attempt, if Dreamcatcher's account is correct, to behead the leadership. And since Dreamcatcher regards himself, and I think is regarded by numerous people as a safe person to sleep around, if you remove the safety, then you make it less likely people will come to the protest. Pretty disgusting stuff, and also sad that Dreamcatcher colludes with that. Although understandable, if you're living outside, you gotta make your deals where you can, I guess.
Any street reports? No. And what's the most powerful? Tell us the latest.
I got a job at the winter shelter.
How are they paying you?
Well, I don't want to talk about
it's
that.
It's a secret. Is it a living wage?
It's more than I've made in a long time.
They've doubled your poverty wage.
Well, I'm not really getting enough money to live on, but...
Not enough to die on either.
No.
Not too much to live on, but a little too much to die.
But I get to help people.
Well, that's good.
It's really good. It's fun helping people.
And all these interviews are in the food line at the Red Church, the Calvary Episcopal Church at Cedar and Church Streets on... Cedar and Lincoln, on Monday the 5th, which was just 3 days ago. The woman I was just talking to, Merity Wells, puts out a thing called the free sheet or the free meals sheet or the free chart. Go on Facebook and look for Merity Wells or look for free meals, Santa Cruz. I haven't got it quite right, but somewhere around there. And she actually, as I've mentioned in the past on this show, puts out a one-page list of things that are actually free, not just services that the city claims exist, but actually will send you to answering machines or numbers that don't answer at all or people that tell you to come in and fill in a form next week sometime, that sort of thing. But actual meals where you can get food. Sometimes you have to listen to a bunch of nonsense of a bizarre religious sort, like at the Elm Street Mission, and I've asked... suggested to Merity that when she puts out the next edition of her free meal sheet that she make it clear that some of these meals do require you to sit there and nod on or nod off while you hear a lot of Christian propaganda or whatever, propaganda of different kinds, in order to get fed, which is really kind of disgusting, really, in a way, particularly since it... It so clearly runs in a hypocritical contrast with the, you would think would be the, which I think is, seems to be the pretty straightforward message of these Christian groups, which the big message of, you know, love thy brother or thy sister, charity begins at home or at least the people closest to you. And actually what it all is it's a propaganda campaign for a particular ideology, which is... nothing new.
Thank you. It's fun helping people.
Anything else? How is your meals coming?
They're going great. I even serve in the rain because people are like twice as grateful to eat when they're hungry, tired.
Is this at the town clock or at the depot?
No, we moved from the depot. We're over at Harvey West Park Friendship Garden. And we serve at 3 o'clock. And if nobody's there, then we go to Homeless Services Center, and then we go to the library.
And what day and what time?
Wednesday, 3 o'clock. We serve, I have enough for 100, so I keep on going to locations till I find enough people to eat it.
And are you keeping this up on the website so people know what's going on?
Well, I have a Facebook page, Jesus Food Community, and yes, I put event pages up, and I send you invitations.
You should.
I do.
I never go to Facebook. It sucks, but nonetheless.
Well, it's a good way to reach some people. Some people.
Listen up, kids.
Well, thank you. We've been talking with Merity. Any street reports? Thank you.
That's all, please help.
There you go. Any reports?
They see the truth.
You're looking wet out there. Nice hat, though.
Old too.
I hear you. Say that again.
There's not a dry place in the city where you can sleep at night.
And have you yourself been sleeping underwater, so to speak?
I've been given tickets for sleeping everywhere I go and kicked out of every place I settle into.
Last time that happened was?
Last night.
Where was that, if you want to say?
In front of a doctor's office.
And cops or rangers, sir?
It was the sheriffs, or the cops, yeah, Santa Cruz police.
How many cops?
Just a couple of them. They were fairly relatively nice about it. Actually came and woke me up, and I was able to stay there most of the night. So I'm grateful that I got some rest, but then I had to go out in the rain.
So did they come once or twice?
They came back, made sure I left and I wasn't gone yet. They didn't give me enough time to pack up.
And Any other thoughts you want to pass on?
Cold and wet. Tired. I've been working on my bike trailer all day. I'm hungry. I'm glad that I got a place to come eat.
You want to say who you are?
I'm Gary.
Thank you, Gary. Could be on Free Radio. What's coming up for the first week in February?
Wow. What is happening?
Can we have Steve Plach dumbfounded? What's going on here?
Well, let's see. We have the UNA meeting, board meeting, on Wednesday.
And are you on the board of directors?
Oh, of course I am.
How many boards does that make you on now?
I don't know. There's a dozen or so, perhaps.
It's disgusting.
Committees and
what has he done? Let's look at his record, folks, not his title.
What is my record? There's an orientation tomorrow night, and it's community television. If you would like to produce a television show,
that's where. Well, you got to talk about after Thursday.
After Thursday, wow. I have to give it some thought.
Sorry, you gonna give it some thought?
I'll give it some thought and get back to your listeners.
So he said. He promises. Thank you. I'm talking with.
Hi, Scott Galloway.
And Scott, you're explaining Calvary Episcopals get the fuck off the property at night or we'll call the cops on you if you're outside and have no place to go.
Well, actually, no. We do have security patrols here. We ask people not to sleep in the...
Don't sleep. It's an insecure situation for us.
However, Calvary is home to 15 warming center nights this winter, and we're also running...
Which is good.
Running the winter shelter. Calvary's part of the group, the AFC.
This is good.
Shelter, and we're also... involved with a faith community shelter that's sheltering 20 people.
About maybe 10% of the homeless population in Santa Cruz.
Well, you know, if you really look at it, the homeless census just happened. We don't have the results yet, but if my prediction is there are at least 3,000 people out there that are homeless, and if that's the case, and you're sheltering 100 at the winter shelter max, and you're sheltering 20 at our shelter, that's 120 out of 3,000.
Not really 10%.
It's not even, no. It's not
you're talking
percent.
About the county. I'm talking about the city.
But, oh, well,
I'm
not sure what that percent is, but there's a huge population, and it's underserved.
Underserved and over-policed with security forces, that sort of thing, you mean?
Well, I didn't say that. I think the goal here is to get everybody into permanent lodging. That's the goal.
That's a nice goal. Yeah, I've heard that one for 40 years. While the police get paid five times the money goes to the police, whereas
We need to build housing for people. That's the problem.
Well, are you supporting these security patrols that run around rousting people?
Well, I'm a part of Calvary Episcopal Church, and
you are supporting.
Where we had
you driving people off the grass in the old days. What's happening in the middle of winter in the rain? Tell me.
Nobody wants to sit on the grass in the rain.
That's for sure. Yeah. So you've actually got to let you off the hook on that one.
That's right. I'm off the hook on that one. Right.
But you are driving people out into the eaves of buildings into the rain, or the security people you support are. Right?
Well, actually, we're redirecting people to the winter shelter, which is still not running at capacity, and every day there are buses boarding from North River Street for
at 4 o'clock if you can get out there, correct?
You can get out there and get on the bus, yes.
Are you offering to give people a ride at midnight out to the shelter? They won't let you in, of course. If you
that's too late. Yeah, you got to be there by 4 o'clock.
Well, you know, we all know that every adult has to be in by 4 o'clock. Otherwise, you know, they might do something bad or wrong.
Yeah, but you want to. The food's great. I went out and served at one of the shelters.
The food here is pretty good.
We could go, and the food was really good, and great camaraderie, and, you know, a lot of volunteers out there helping serve food, greet people. It's a class act
for 110 people.
Maximum capacity about 100, yeah, 50 in each facility.
But since there's so many other people trying to hide under the eaves of buildings, you're going to make sure and be supportive of an organization that rousts them into the rain. Is that correct?
Well, that's why I like the idea of creating something like a sanctuary village, so we're not...
I like the idea, but in the meantime, tonight, what are you going to do? You're going to support a group that actually pays people, thugs, to run around and frighten people out into the rain under threat of tickets they can't pay?
Tonight, right here, there'll be a faith community shelter, which will house up to 20 people. I'm not sure
how... What about number 21? What's going to happen to her?
Well, you've roused it into the rain?
So
people don't show up for it. You prearrange in advance to be...
What if some poor, wet soul shows up outside the door? Are you going to make sure that security risk is dealt with properly?
We don't take drop-ins. They have to get signed in and go through a vetting process.
But you will drive them away from even the shelter of the outside of the building. Is that correct?
No, that's not correct.
Well, that's good.
Drive people away. We suggest alternative sleeping places with the security guard standing over them with a flashlight.
Your house in particular is one.
My house is a well-known shelter and refuge. Actually, I don't really have a house, but I do have an apartment. I'm kind of a room or two.
Well, we understand this room on the roof. So,
roof doesn't. It's kind of wet up there, you know.
Yeah, but no, you know, I don't want to make light of this. This is a huge problem in this community, and we need to deal with it more seriously.
So much of this blather from church officials about it, but then what they really do is, you know, they don't take action to deal with the immediate situation, which has to do with, let's say, supporting encampments, as is done in Oakland and elsewhere, where people are actually, the majority of homeless people live in Santa Cruz.
Well, you know, that's interesting that you place it all on the churches, because I think the churches are doing
on the churches, but insofar as you drive people away from your buildings claiming it's a security threat, that's a bunch of horse shit. And it has to be, and you're at that, well, we really like the idea of shelter. You know, we really hope that somewhere down the road.
We're actually assisting in running two shelters, the Faith Community Shelter and the Winter Shelter.
All of which serves about 130 people at max.
Well, then there's the Warming Center also, which again, 15 nights.
Which is occasionally open under extreme circumstances. I'm glad it is. I'm glad all these programs exist for the people that get them, but your enforcement policies, which you keep ducking there, my man.
Well, that's a community-wide problem.
No, it's your problem. Insofar as you're involved with the AFC, it's your problem.
It's a community-wide problem.
You're responsible for it if it happens here.
We don't have adequate shelter for the people that need it.
You're responsible for it if it happens here.
And so are you too, sir.
No, I'm not. I'm not on the AFC board. I'm not supporting it. You are. I'm not.
You could join Calvary Episcopal Church today if you wish to.
Oh, I could, and would I? And yes, I would. Or actually, I'd be more irresponsible because I would say, regard to your management, let them sleep. Which you don't do.
Comment.
No comment at this time.
It's getting circular.
I think we are a little circular. But I think our audience can hear what's going on. Perhaps Steve Plaich, who's a busy working man, will be able to pause and give us some thoughts.
Maybe he'll give you a pause. Right now he's busy serving bagels to people who...
Actually, he's not. He's busy looking busy, walking back and forth.
He's wrapping bagels for people to take home with
him. That's true. That is true. I see some people out there that are still eating, and so
and then the shelter will be starting in another 20 minutes.
Try to work more efficiently, Steve, for heaven's sake.
Right.
And again, we've been talking with.
Well, good talking to you, Robert. Always good. Keep pushing the margins.
And I've had the pleasure of talking with
Scott Galloway,
a man who's had experience in a number of fields, including the Transit Authority. You are on the board of the AFC, and now you're still
on the board of the AFC. Yeah.
But before this, you were on the board of
Calvary Episcopal Church.
And before that, you were on the board.
No, that's it.
Well, you got to go a distance to keep up with Steve Plaich.
Oh, he's everywhere. He's a veritable man around town, the Renaissance man.
Board of the boards, yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, he's on everything.
Thank you, Scott.
You bet. Take care.
All right.
Six. There'll be a few people here, but they're not hassled that I can see by security. So intense bright lights that they've positioned everywhere.
That's to wake people up.
Oh, yeah. But that's done the most, so I don't see, I see first alarm come through and walk around and get back in their car and drive out. They're not doing much.
Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that. I mean, Scott perhaps feels as an official, he has to give out the official word, yo, we don't let that happen. But, in fact, maybe it is happening, and that shows a certain amount of compassion.
I'm just saying the lights have discouraged people dramatically.
Right, but security guards are not doing that specifically as far as you saw them.
No.
But then again, you're not there at 3 in the morning either, are you?
Exactly right.
And we've been talking with...
The Lone Ranger. Clayton Moore.
Thank you, sir. So I'm here at Freedom Sleep Out 83. The rain is misting, and Freedom Sleepers have moved under the eaves of the city council offices or the city administration offices. There.
But I think we're going to have to leave that for another time because the clock is ticking down on this edition of Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. I'm going to kind of review what has been cooking in the last week because there have been some interesting developments. The Coastal Commission, which is the group that has put the nicks on the city bigots' attempt to ban RVs from parking at night, in Santa Cruz City and in Santa Cruz County, although, of course, the Cynthia Matthews permit parking bans are all over the place in the city, and there are lots of no parking signs up and down the roads along the county area, too, which may, in fact, be a violation of the Coastal Commission's rules. Now, about a year ago, I challenged, at the suggestion of Councilmember Posner, the decision by the city to ban RVs, claiming that they do not provide access, it denies people access to the coast. And the Coastal Commission kind of agreed with me and held off on giving permission to the city for banning RVs at night. And they still have not given them permission or held a hearing on that matter. Although I've heard stories of people in RVs being hassled for different purposes. It's not clear, however, that they're using this law that was put forward by Councilwoman Rochelle Naroyan and passed by the City Council last year, as well as the year before, in a broader version. But the issue in Southern California is similar. They're going after homeless people in Venice by attacking them with anti-homeless laws and anti-homeless signage. And that really is the issue, I think, that we may want to look at here in Santa Cruz. Because though they don't have an RV ban now, although it's on the books and they're not enforcing it, they do have an enforced series of parking restrictions that probably is subject to the same kind of attack as the broader RV nighttime ban in Santa Cruz City and in the county. In other words, if you're putting up signs up and down the coast saying you can't park here at night, it's the same thing as having a city or county-wide law, pretty much. You are essentially severely restricting access to the coast in a way that the Coastal Commission has historically said no to, including in Santa Cruz, in very particular areas where they sought to put up signage that banned the parking of RVs at night, or I think even vehicles at night. And that's, of course, the story in Santa Cruz. They don't just ban RVs. They ban all vehicles parked at night in a lot of these permit parking zones. So this may be a way to go to push back against the fashionable upper-class bigotry that masquerades as public safety or all kinds of other excuses that essentially is a form of homeless removal. And that's something I'm going to be looking at further and maybe talking about more on Sunday when I come back. And I'm kind of reviewing quickly different sort of updates that I could give you. Don't really have a lot of time to do that, and so I think I'm going to have to sort of pass on this. Let's see here. Yeah, I think what we're going to do is we're just going to go out on a little bit of music. And again, if anybody has reports of people being hassled in vehicles or just hassled generally by police, whether it's Caltrans officials or sheriff's deputies or Santa Cruz police or Parks and Rec rangers, try to note things like when it happened, where it happened, who did it, what was said. But even if you can't get all the details, get some of the details and pass them on. I'll be giving an update on the latest Tough meeting that we had yesterday. That's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And events around bathroom buffoonery reported by Pushback Pat Colby, an activist who's been keeping a real close eye on and actually has been experiencing a disabled discrimination in the bathrooms at the Locust Street Garage and the Santa Cruz Public Branch, our main branch of the public library. And I'll be talking about that.
as well as, goodness knows, all kinds of things. So be sure to come back, and you'll hear more starting at 9:30 on Sunday morning. In the meantime, if you want to reach me off-air, you can at 423-4833. That's the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom line, 423-HUFF. And I will try to get back to you. If I don't call you immediately, I will try to call you sooner or later, and hopefully sooner rather than later, 423-4833. You can also get on the Huff email.